deep left into the bleachers. A two-run homer.
A swing and a miss. Ball game.
Liftoff.
And history marches on. 22 consecutive wins.
From the sports desk of the Akron Beacon Journal and Ohio.com, this is Leading Off with Ryan Lewis, a podcast on Cleveland baseball.
Santana makes the catch! Ball game! The Indians have won the American League pennant!
The Cleveland Indians are going to the World Series!
Now, Ryan Lewis and Ashley Fastock.
Welcome to Leading Off, a podcast on Cleveland baseball. I'm Ashley Bastock here with our beat writer at the Akron Beacon Journal, Ryan Lewis. Post All-Star break, and we are back, baby.
And all I've done for the last week is listen to Welcome to the Internet from Bo Burnham.
Ryan, I was going to say that till the end. I should have just put it a note in the magical Google Doc that we were waiting until the end to talk about Bo Burnham. Folks, Ryan, about a month late, has discovered the Bo Burnham Netflix special Inside. Some of us watched that at the end of May. Actually, you're almost 2 months late. Some of us watched that at the end of May, beginning of June, when it premiered.
I feel like I've been catching a lot of flack on this podcast, and other people have texted me, so it's catching on.
Yeah.
That I'm late on stuff, but it is baseball season.
Basically, I bully you on this podcast, and other people follow my lead, basically.
I'm glad that it's at least acknowledged, at least.
Okay, well.
If anyone hasn't seen Inside by Bo Burnham on Netflix, could not recommend it more. It was almost like weirdly cathartic to watch him go through and be so honest about everything, and then also the songs are amazing, and Welcome to the Internet, and oh, so what I was going to say the other day is Bezos won.
Yes.
Someone made a 1 hour long seamless loop of Bezos won, and it has like hundreds of thousands, maybe even now millions of views. Welcome to the Internet has 28 million views on YouTube, and like 3 million of them are me in the last week.
Which is just ironic, given the song. I mean, the song Welcome to the Internet is about how everything is available on the Internet, obviously. So the fact that it's racked up that many views is impressive. I will say, the first time I watched it, I was like, I think I get this, right? But it's pretty depressing in a lot of ways to watch. It's not a typical comedy special at all. So I watched it. And then the songs, they get released on Spotify or whatever, and I start listening to them, and I'm realizing how catchy they all are and that it's actually very quality music overall. So the songs, more than anything, brought me back to the special when I rewatched it finally a few weeks ago, and I enjoyed it overall much more the second time. Like, the first time, like I said, it was pretty dark and bleak, I thought, but this time I appreciated the irony in it all more than anything, I think. And the songs have just been on a basic loop in my head. I get a different song stuck in my head every day. It seems like, can't say enough about it.
Yeah, it's it is something where when you go into it with the correct mindset of what you kind of know what to expect, it can kind of change how you see certain things. And the fact that he just did all that by himself in that little space is kind of tremendous.
Leading off.
I also resonated with him watching the clock count down when his 20s ended at midnight. I think we can all, most of us can resonate with that.
Well, I'm not 30 yet, so in like a year and a half I'll be able to. But, you know, leading off, the only place where you can get frank pop culture discussion along with talk on Cleveland baseball. I do want to come back to Bo Burnham later, but let's get some sure. Cleveland baseball points up on deck here. So let's start with Bobby Bradley. He left the game against the Astros on Tuesday night as a precaution with back spasms. First of all, just give us the latest on him, because when you've been playing as well as Bobby Bradley has recently, you get to lead off injury corner.
He has earned that for sure. So he's dealing with back spasms. Terry Francona mentioned that he's been feeling it a little bit more when he's throwing than when he's hitting. So he may be able to fit into the lineup kind of in that capacity, but he seems to be doing okay. it doesn't seem to be something too serious as long as he kind of bounced back from last night's game, which, I assume we'll get an update later today. We're recording this little afternoon on Thursday. I assume we'll get an update today, but barring something popping up, he seems to be okay, which is, good news for that lineup, which, you know, this team just cannot really afford, too much more on the injury front, which has become kind of the story of the whole season.
Yeah, and while we're at this corner, what's the latest on anyone else you want to give from your magical word document? I know you wrote recently in the last couple of days here about the updates for Shane Bieber and Aaron Sabale.
Yeah, that is a document being updated daily. So Aaron Sabale is nearing throwing on the mound. That's kind of the next step. That could be today or tomorrow, Thursday or Friday. So that's, you know, that means that he's still a ways off. That's just getting back to the mound. There are several steps in a pitcher's progression after that to really get back into games. And Shane Bieber is a few steps behind him where he's just starting to throw. And there are several steps, kind of between them. So they're still a few weeks away. It's still a waiting game and a kind of a survival game for Cleveland just to remain at least within plausible striking distance of the White Sox and one of the wild card spots, which is it's a really difficult task, like we've talked about all season. And one of the things, I guess one of the issues is if you look at Cleveland, you know, one could say, okay, well, if they get Bieber and Savali back, those are two really talented starting pitchers. Maybe this team can go on a run, especially considering, you know, what they did last year and what they've done in years past where they've tended to go on runs in August or September, recently. All of that is true, but the White Sox are also, you know, they have their own smaller injury corner with Luis Robert, with Eloy Jimenez and with Yasmani Grandal. And all three of those guys within the next few weeks, maybe a month or so, you know, all three of those guys could be back. So while Cleveland's rotation is nearing a healthier spot, Chicago's lineup is also nearing kind of that same situation. So, but for Cleveland though, it's just still about these younger pitchers trying to kind of keep their heads above water and adjust and develop at the major league level to a much greater extent than what they normally would under different circumstances. And, you know, as we've talked about, I'm not going to go into it too much, but just an important situation to kind of conceptualize and remember is that, you know, Cleveland dealt Kluber, Bauer, Carrasco was in the Lindor trade, but I guess he's included here, and Clevinger. And that was, you know, that was to kind of go through a few different goals. And one of those goals was to address different parts of the roster. And, you know, Cleveland was still left with three guys who you could kind of say are, you know, have more of an established track record at the major league level. And then a slew of younger pitchers who the team is high on long term. But in the short run, there was a little bit of, questioning, just in terms of track record. You know, Tristan McKenzie, and I guess Tristan McKenzie and Cal Quantrill probably had the most, you know, major league track record of that entire group. But McKenzie had really one shortened season where he also experienced a velocity dip and he hadn't gone through an entire season yet. And Quantrill had been in the bullpen. He had bounced back and forth earlier in his career. So there are a lot of question marks. And the three more established guys getting hurt just put so much pressure on it. And that's kind of been the issue. And that's been, you know, the biggest hurdle for them. So that's still the situation that they're in for the next few weeks, even with Zach Plesac back. So it's still about just kind of, you know, staying within striking distance, which they're kind of on that cusp. And you know, time is running relatively short, or they're at least nearing that point pretty soon.
So talking about younger pitchers, this is the perfect transition here. We promised you last week there would be lots to talk about with JC Mejia facing the Astros one way or the other. And I kind of loved what you wrote in that his outing in Houston served as a microcosm of his season. He notches a career high 8 strikeouts. His night was soured a little bit in the fifth inning. Jordan Alvarez launched a 2-run homer on a changeup that Mejia left in the zone. The homer extends the Astros lead to 4-1. And Mejia finishes with those four earned runs on seven hits to go with those eight strikeouts.
Yeah, and he's had stretches that, you know, Cleveland's coaching staff in the front office have obviously really liked. He's had stretches where he's put things together. He's looked really good. Earlier in the season, you know, one of his big issues was the first inning. He wasn't able to start an outing well. I think it was in Pittsburgh, or at least against Pittsburgh, that he got really roughed up in the first inning and then threw four or five scoreless innings after that and just cruised. And, you know, he's had stretches that have given glimpses of what Cleveland knows is kind of locked in there in terms of potential. It's just trying to figure out how to get it out. So earlier, you know, his issue was the first inning. Lately, it's been, left-handed hitters, like Alvarez, who has been crushing everything. And so they're trying to work with him kind of on his arsenal, which is true basically with all of the younger pitchers right now, but they're trying to work with JC Mejia, trying to give him something more to offer to left-handed hitters, which by the way, back in the day is something that Shane Bieber, not to compare them, but it's something that younger pitchers do deal with while pitching at the major league level for the first time, you know, and Bieber's gone on to, he's developed a changeup. He's worked in a cutter. He's done all these things to kind of add to his own arsenal. And that's something that a lot of younger pitchers have to do. And, but right now, JC Mejia is going through, kind of that issue where, he's struggling to really put away left-handed hitters. And that's kind of the next step for him.
And then in that same game, though, and we'll move on to talk about Tristan McKenzie here shortly, but the crazy stat of the day is in that game, Franmil Reyes hit his fifth homer since returning on July 2nd. And I know you wrote about him in your walk-off thoughts as well from that one.
Yeah, and what I think is funny is that so oftentimes when, especially when Cleveland's dugout is on the third base side, which is the case at home and in some road ballparks. When Reyes rounds second, he'll give the they used to do like the finger guns, and then Reyes will do the bazooka, like on like mounted on his shoulder. And what's funny is I think it seems like the more that he hits home runs and the further that he hits home runs, teammates have done it, and it seems like the bazooka is getting bigger and bigger. And so eventually it's gonna be like a fully extended arm on there. But he keeps talking about the scoreboard. It's, and Kyle Quantrill said it's only a matter of time. It's,
yeah.
Quantrill was saying that, you know, watch his batting practice. The other team watches his batting practice. You know, Reyes has legitimate power, and he's continued to kind of elevate what he's offered. And, you know, again, he was really one of the centerpieces, really the centerpiece in that, Trevor Bauer deal. He was the long-term piece in the lineup that they were trying to convert Bauer's shorter term service and higher salary into a more controllable bat. And Fran Reyes has provided everything they could have hoped for. He's certainly, you know, well liked in the clubhouse. He's been everything that the team could have, you know, hoped for from that trade. And he's just been lights out, since he returned from the injured list. And, you know, Tito has applauded Reyes for how he kept his timing, in the minor leagues. And Reyes talked about how he went up to Shane Bieber and Aaron Civale while they were just throwing and just asked if he could kind of stand there and just keep his timing, because that's kind of his process. And he's been just a massive part of this lineup, especially with Jose Ramirez dealing. Oh, and I forgot in the injury corner, I forgot to bring up Jose Ramirez, who's been dealing with an elbow issue, and he's somewhat day to day and could return. But especially with him out the last few days, Reyes is just the absolute you know, impact bat that they need.
And if you've listened to this podcast weekly with us, I mean, you know, Brian and I have talked about Franmil hitting the scoreboard so many times, but I did want to plug that story you wrote on it finally, this past week here. So, really, really great stuff. And go check that out at beaconjournal.com under the Cleveland Baseball Sports tab. So on to Tristan McKenzie, because we talked about this yesterday offline, but really a similar outing compared to Mejia as Cleveland fell 9-3 to the Astros on Tuesday. He was tagged for five earned runs on eight hits with one walk and three strikeouts. And overall, I kind of want to ask you about what they said about him attacking the zone, because good or bad with him this year, I feel like that is always what comes up, that when he has these really strong outings that he doesn't shy away from doing that. And it's not perfect yet, but what else can we add about that with this most recent start?
Yeah. that's been really the overlying issue. It's been command and attacking the zone, and they viewed, you know, his most recent start as a real step forward in terms of aggressiveness. You know, McKenzie had that outstanding start against the Royals, like a week or so ago, followed it up facing a much tougher Astros lineup. I don't know if his line ended up looking quite as good as probably the team felt he pitched, but attacking the zone almost regardless of results, it's almost like a process over results, or it's really, the team's really having to value process and results at the same time. But in terms of his aggressiveness, Tito, you know, viewed it as a step forward. You know, Tristan at one point said that he thinks that it may have backfired on him, but that he stuck with the plan. Because that's the next step for, you know, Tristan McKenzie, is that, you know, Carr Willis talked about Tito, and Tito has talked about it. They're trying to get him to really understand that, you know, his stuff can play in the zone, that he can stay in the zone to a greater extent, and his stuff is good enough that it can play. And, you know, he mentioned that for him, that was an adjustment period, understanding that, yes, you know, he's at the major league level. This is what got him here. If he's up 1-2 in the count, he doesn't have to dance around quite as much. And yes, in general, when you have two strikes, a pitcher doesn't want to catch too much of the plate. But to a greater extent than what he's been doing, you know, he can allow himself to play in the zone, and it's kind of finding a balance there. And that's kind of the next thing for him. But his last two starts combined have been pretty positive. I'm certainly under the circumstances and in the situation, they'll definitely take it. But that's kind of the next thing for him, is just this continued kind of stepping stones toward a more aggressive approach and trusting his stuff at the major league level, which, you know, at times they've seen is good enough.
And moving on to Wednesday, Cleveland avoids the sweep, tops Houston 5-4, first win against the Astros this season in 7 games. Cesar Hernandez sets a new career high with his 16th homer of the year, which you wrote about in your walk-off thoughts. And you also mentioned how he's kind of the perfect example of a team identifying a potential rebound candidate.
Yep, and that's how a lot of teams operate now, and it's especially true with Cleveland, is that when they're looking at the free agent market, you know, they're going to have to identify these types of guys. And it's often going to be with an analytical approach, but, you know, not always. That the analytical side of it is often one piece to the puzzle, where you gather as much information as you can. You talk to your scouts, you talk to your, analytical team, you look at past track record, you look at all these other scenarios, you layer everything on top of each other. You layer on some of the traditional stats, and you layer on, some of, the more analytical numbers. And the idea is to just piece together that puzzle. You know, talking with, Mike Chernoff several years ago, he used the analogy of it's kind of like a blueprint, and you're laying the blueprints on top of each other to where you're trying to get as complete of a picture as possible. In Cesar Hernandez's case, you know, the issue that they kind of identified was when he was with Philly, you know, he had some tremendous seasons, but his production started, to kind of wane, and they moved him down the order to where he was hitting, oftentimes in the spot before or two spots before, the pitcher spot in the lineup, which kind of changes how you need to hit. You can't be so passive, because teams in a lot of situations have no problem walking the seventh or eighth hitter to get to the pitcher, especially if there's two outs. So you almost have to be a little more aggressive. It changed what he was trying to do at the plate, and Cleveland identified him as possibly, a rebound candidate who isn't going to cost quite as much as some other guys, but could give you that kind of production. And I think he played 58 games last year. He absolutely returned that investment, very, very well. And he came back on a 1-year deal with a club option for next year. He hasn't quite been the same hitter as he was last year, but he's still, certainly, made the $5 million, deal worth it, as a return on investment. And he's brought a little bit of extra power. He said last night, that there wasn't a major adjustment to his swing. There wasn't any major adjustment to what he did in the offseason. He's just felt stronger year over year as his career has progressed, and that it's kind of, just built into this. And so he's been a guy that, you know, that's the type of free agent signing, you know, the Austin Jacksons of the world, the Cesar Hernandezes of the world. Those are the type of signings that can really bring some serious value to any club, but especially a club in Cleveland's situation and just how they operate. That's exactly what they kind of need to do. And those are the type of guys that they need to hit on. And with him, they have.
And if you are sick as listeners of hearing us talk about the younger pitchers, too bad, because we have one more for you this week, because Eli Morgan started that game on Wednesday. And again, I know we've talked so much about it with these guys and how they adjust their usage between their various pitches that are in their arsenal. So you wrote about with him adjusting his changeup and fastball usage.
Yeah, this entire week with these younger pitchers kind of showed each step of the way. There have been some positive performances, and then on top of that, I think Cleveland's been able to identify, okay, here's the next major step. And with Eli Morgan, it's adjusting his fastball and changeup usage, because all through the minor leagues, his bread and butter was the changeup. And, you know, he was ranked to have the best command in the system, according to Baseball America. So that's always been kind of his MO, utilizing that changeup and just having that pinpoint command and being able to work around hitters that way. In the major league at the major league level, the changeup just hasn't played as well as it has in the past. So he's having to adjust. And the usage on Wednesday night was, by pitch total, it wasn't too far off from his season averages, but in terms of sequencing and when he was using it, that was different. He gave up a home run to Kyle Tucker, in which was an at bat where he threw four changeups. That was just a matchup thing. And he was unhappy with the changeups that he threw. He threw three way outside the zone, wasn't really close. Each one was worse than the last one. He threw a fourth changeup that caught too much of the zone and was crushed. So for Eli Morgan, it's a major adjustment, really, when you've been leaning on your changeup for so long and all of a sudden it's still a weapon. But he's needing to mix in his fastball a little bit more, his slider a little bit more. And so that's going to be kind of his next adjustment. And again, with Bieber and Savali still weeks away, multiple weeks away, these guys are just going to have to continue to adjust on the fly in fairly difficult circumstances where, yes, there are always some younger players at the major league level having to develop, there. But in Cleveland's, situation with all these injuries, they haven't been able to just ride the hot hand or two at a time and then allow other guys to develop away from as competitive of an environment and allow them to go down to Columbus. All of these guys, for the most part, have had to do this in Cleveland, and that's been the difficult part. But that's the next step for Eli Morgan, in that he's having to not go away from what he's done, but kind of tweak it.
Let's rewind to the weekend series against the A's to, pun intended, cover our bases post All-Star break here so that we talk about all these games. So really quickly, the brief rundown. Emmanuel Clase was two outs away from getting Cleveland its fourth straight win when Jed Lowrie hit a walk-off against Cleveland last Friday. Cleveland bounces back with 3-2 and 4-2 wins, but kind of a cool story from that 4-2 win. I believe it was the 4-2 win there. All these days are running together here, but I know what month it is this week, so we're off to a great start. But anyways, kind of a cool story from last weekend that once again proves the poetry of baseball here. Daniel Johnson hit a go-ahead homer, his first homer ever in the majors in front of his family and friends, as he is a Bay Area native.
Yeah, I mean, those are always the fun stories to see. There's a huge, contingent. Everybody's happy for him. Everybody mentioned it after the game. Tito, the players. And the other cool thing about his story is that he's been knocking on the door of the majors for several seasons. And he did make his debut earlier. He's been at the major league level before. But in a larger sense, trying to get a larger sample size, trying to stick in the majors, he's been right there for a few seasons where he's had really tremendous spring trainings. And several years ago, it was to the point that he forced Cleveland's coaching staff to have a conversation that it didn't seem like they thought they were going to really have to have about really considering taking him when they broke camp and him making the opening day roster, where he was on the 40-man roster, but still likely, a few years away, still needs some things to develop. But he played so well in spring training that he at least forced the conversation, and at least got some acknowledgement there. And that that happened a couple of times where he's been right there. He's an intriguing, you know, younger player with some pop, with a great arm from the outfield. So to have kind of that extended, you know, waiting period where Cleveland's had such a crowded younger outfield situation for so long. They've had so many guys on the 40-man roster. They're all younger. And Daniel Johnston was kind of, you know, toward the back of that line just because of when he, of, you know, when he progressed and developed and when he kind of was able to join that fold, and that he's had to kind of just wait his turn for a while, buy his time. And so for him to have that extended period of time where Cleveland had to work through, you know, the Tyler Naquins of the world and Bradley Zimmer and Oscar Mercado, and he's in AAA for so long, to come up and then have that home run in front of his, you know, friends and family, basically in his backyard from where he grew up in the Bay Area. It's just a cool story. And it's one of those things that it's just, you know, it's always a fun thing to kind of see where, you know, he certainly enjoyed that. And, but he remains an intriguing, you know, piece to Cleveland's outfield puzzle, to where he hasn't had an extended shot yet at the major league level. And he may get that chance this season. You know, Josh Naylor's injury, really opened up a lot of at bats, for potentially Daniel Johnson, potentially Oscar Mercado, potentially Bradley Zimmer. You know, so those guys will have more of a chance to kind of see if they can show if they can stick. And, you know, Johnson's kind of in that group now.
One point I want to make looking ahead this weekend, there's obviously a 4-game series against the Rays. We are recording this on Thursday. If you're listening to it on Thursday, that's why there are 4 games still left. That's why I'm saying that. But the one thing I always love about these series is between Tampa Bay and Cleveland is the possibility of a prank war erupting between Terry Francona and Kevin Cash. And for me, my favorite prank that's ever been played in this prank war was, I believe it was 2018, Kevin Cash stealing Terry Francona's scooter and putting it out near second base for Rays batting practice. So always something fun to keep an eye on this series.
Yeah, that's always fun. And anytime Tito gets asked a question about Kevin Cash, he immediately gets this big smile on his face. And we all know, like, some form of a joke is coming. They have a ton of respect for each other. It's all in jest. Tito, after often joking about him, will always give him credit for, you know, the manager that Kevin Cash is and the success that he's had and how highly Cleveland thought of Kevin Cash long before, you know, he left Cleveland when he was there. But those two have a tremendous prank war going. That was also the one, as soon as he started talking, that's the one that came to mind when Tito's bike, I think it was at shortstop.
I have the video of it still, quite honestly. I might, like, dig it out and post it on Twitter before the game today because I love it. I mean, and that was when, I mean, a little bit inside baseball here. I was stringing, so I was covering the Rays that day. And to be there and watch him wheel that out, I was like, this is not real life. Like, this simply is not real.
I think at the time we asked Tito if he would feel comfortable or if he could announce – any secondary response that he was going to have a second strike, you could say. And I think at the time he mentioned, like, the Rays had were on such a roll at the time. They were such a hot team that he didn't really want to poke the bear at that time. And it may not have been in Cleveland's best interest, but it was a shame that the last couple of years, the prank war has had to kind of take a back seat due to several reasons. But hopefully it'll return because those two are often crafty, we'll say.
And what was the prank where didn't Tito have them put up Kevin Cash's like career stats on the scoreboard? Was that the prank that came first? And then Kevin Cash was like, let me steal that scooter real quick.
Yeah. Tito had a hearty laugh at that one. Yeah. Cause Kevin Cash's stat line is not something that looks great, we'll say. And then, yeah, that led to the stealing of the hog.
Gotta love it, man. Anyways, you know, we promised we would come back to some Bo Burnham once we got the baseball business, fully talked about here. So, Ryan, what do you say to a 3-round quick fantasy draft, of songs from Bo Burnham's Inside. Just three rounds, really, really quickly.
I'm in.
Okay.
I just need to try to remember.
I'm pulling up the song list because I won't be able to remember.
I've got a list.
This is thrilling, riveting audio content.
Okay, we're good.
And truthfully, like, I wouldn't have even asked to do this, but folks, Ryan and I, for the last, like, week, I would say our conversations have been 20% Cleveland baseball and 80% these songs since Ryan just, again, discovered it, like, a week ago.
Oh, my gosh. I knew it was there. I just hadn't had a chance to sit down and watch it.
I know. I'm really very mean because obviously Ryan is super busy with this, with, you know, his job and baseball.
Stop yelling at me.
I should be nicer.
My wife and I have been Bo Burnham fans for a long time, and we were able to see him when he came to Kent State and perform.
Yeah.
So this is the first time that we had seen any of his content in quite a while. And I just thought it's just so honest, the effort that he put into it, the production. I was just kind of blown away.
All right. So we're going to do our random number generator here. Can you see this? Let me blow up our little.
I can't, I trust that.
Okay. So it's a number between 1 and 10. So you get to pick first as it is your podcast. What do you think? 5? Okay. I'm going with 4. Oh, this is the second time in a row you beat me like that because you finally figured out the strategy. It is 9. So you
pick a stupid number like I did the first time.
Yeah, you picked like 6, so I was just like 5? Like, no, were you 8?
I picked 8 the first time.
I was like 5.
And immediately as I said, I'm like, wait, that was stupid.
He knows so much more about advanced stats and metrics than I do, and yet couldn't figure out the best strategy for picking a number between 1 and 10.
I was caught off guard. I panicked. Total panic move. I botched it.
You did, but I'm annoyed because I know what you're going to pick first, and it's a song that I also want. So, like, let's just move on. This is a quick... Let's do 4 rounds. You know, I take it back. Let's do 4 rounds. We won't talk as long as we normally do during these.
Okay.
Go on.
The first pick is Welcome to the Internet, which I don't know if a song has ever like kind of grabbed me or pulled me in like this song. I'm obsessed with it. It's a masterpiece of a villain song. I sang Creed the other day and I'm this close to singing a part of it, but I'm not going to do that. But Welcome to the Internet is the top pick.
Fair enough. Ryan. Oh, I need to write these down so we can do a recap. So Ryan with his first pick. Taking Welcome to the Internet, which I think is like the longest song on there too. And it really is perfect. It really does a fabulous job of highlighting that, as it says, you can get a little bit of everything all of the time. And great, you know, phenomenal. So with my first pick, I'm going to take the other song Ryan and I have talked about and really, I think, was the first song to blow up in meme form, especially on TikTok. I have to take White Woman's Instagram because obviously, like I said, I mean, for all the reasons I just stated, like, it's super catchy. I think without that song, this special wouldn't have blown up in the same way. And it overall just really, really comical look at the irony that is social media that, you know, we all are projecting a quote unquote perfect life or a life that you want people to see. And that's, you know, in most cases, not what's happening behind the scenes. Like, we're all still human beings and people. And it's a funny, comical look at, especially how Instagram in particular is used in the social media universe.
Yes. That's the one. We haven't even talked about it quite as much as others, but that's the one that I think everybody kind of latched onto as the video is just phenomenal. The way that he did that.
Yeah. And so with my first pick, I've taken White Woman's Instagram. Ryan, time for your second pick.
This is a tough one now. I think I will go with Bezos 1.
No!
Okay. That was the right pick then. I think I'm going to go, because it's also so catchy. The scream at the end, I laughed out loud the first time I heard it. And like we said at the top of the podcast, there's an hour-long loop. That is amazing. So, Bezos 1.
Well, if you aren't as intimately familiar with these songs as Ryan and I, Bezos, there's 2 Jeff Bezos songs on this special. And Bezos One is the one that begins CEO entrepreneur born in 1964, Jeffrey Bezos. And no, I will not grace you with my singing voice, even though it would be fair use. I'm not going to do it.
Those are also basically the only lyrics that we can say on this podcast.
Yeah, they're very inappropriate lyrics. You won't, a lot of these songs have inappropriate lyrics, fair warning, and you won't be catching us quoting them per se most times, but we'll just talk about why we have latched on to those particular songs. I do love Bezos One. I'm very upset right now. I'm very thrown through a loop. So with my second pick, I think I'm going to take Comedy, which is the second song in the special. And again, all about, much like my first pick, a song with great irony, talking about trying to be funny during a pandemic, like when the world is seemingly grinding to a halt or whatever. And that's the song that is nominated for an Emmy. So definitely I would like to pick that one since it has a chance to win an award. And again, it's just pretty, pretty catchy. So Ryan, it is time for your third pick.
Okay. So I think I will go with That Funny Feeling.
Mm-hmm. That's a great, I'm really upset right now. That's not okay.
Have I picked you three times in a row?
I wouldn't even pick my own draft to win this at this point.
Well, it's not fair when I get the first pick again.
I know.
It was your method, to be fair.
I love that song.
So we record this on Teams and then release the audio for podcast. I almost wish the video could be on here to display.
BJ, no, don't release the video.
Frustration with how this draft has gone.
Can you hear me banging my head? Like, I'm literally losing my mind. I'm so upset. All right, well, because I don't even have words. I mean, I do love that song. I think, personally, musically, I think that's the best song on the album. I saw Phoebe Bridgers, she either posted it on Instagram or on her Twitter about wanting to cover the song, which I would simply ascend from this earth if that happened. Overall, just a really great song, and I am not going to be talking to Ryan for a week after this. So time for my third pick, because it's still there. I'm going to take Bezos 2. I don't think it's as catchy as Bezos 1, but still very catchy, still kind of blew up on TikTok, I think. I think the two Bezos songs plus White Woman's Instagram really became memes in a way that made the whole special super popular.
So that was going to be my pick.
You don't get both Bezos songs. I'm very happy.
Okay, so for my final pick, I'll go with All Eyes on Me.
Ryan, yeah, I'm really can't do this. I can't. I want to cut out. I legit am so mad. I want to cut out this entire draft now. I'm so mad. I've never been more mad about anything, including the baseball movie draft, which I thought I was going to literally have to leave the podcast over. Wow.
Oh, Lord. To be fair, in the baseball podcast, you sniped my number one movie of all time.
Yeah, but then we traded.
True.
True. You don't even have anything to say about it. You're just guessing at the songs I like.
No. I mean, the last two, I will say, Welcome to the Internet and Bezos One. Welcome to the Internet is in its own tier.
Listen. You know why I'm annoyed? Because we had a conversation the other day, and I said, Welcome to the Internet, into Bezos 2, into That Funny Feeling, into All Eyes on Me, is as strong as a run on any album that I have ever heard. And you literally took basically all of them. I have Bezos 2. You took the other three. What is this?
Great value drafting, I think is what it is. You take the best player available.
Listen. I don't even know what I'm going to do now. So Ryan, with his fourth pick, has stolen another one of my picks and taking All Eyes on Me. And I guess with my pick, my final pick here, I don't even know what to take, man. This is just so rude.
I legitimately feel like we will not be speaking until next week's podcast on air.
Oh, I guess I'm taking Content, which is the first song, and I do like it. It's very short. It's a good intro into, like, state of mind while making this, which is good. It lets you know right off the bat what you're getting. Like, he is alone, and he has made this special for us to, quote-unquote, enjoy, even though it's not exactly enjoyable in the usual way.
Yeah, but that's why I'm really drawn to this special, and I think it's because of that, because he spent a year or so writing these songs, performing them, producing everything, performing the music, and he basically just said, like, I hope you enjoy it. And it was just, it was just weirdly cathartic in a way to see him kind of go through all of this and kind of present it in such an open way. And then obviously the best part is now this draft, just due to the frustration.
I don't even want to close this out. I don't even know how to close it out. I'm so irate.
Okay. How about I will trade you. I'll trade you that funny feeling for a Bo Burnham song in a special to be named later.
Okay. All that's right. Fine. So you only have 3 picks and I have 5.
That's fine.
Okay. So with that trade completed, our final draft is Ryan went first. He took Welcome to the Internet. Bezos won. That funny feeling, which he has been traded to me for a Bo Burnham song to be named later, and cash considerations, maybe?
Yeah.
Finally, All Eyes on Me. I went second. I chose White Woman's Instagram, comedy, Bezos to Content, and once again got that funny feeling back and salvaged my draft, because otherwise, I fully admit Ryan would have been a runaway winner with this. So, oh man, that was brutal. That was the worst draft we have done.
I thought great. I had a great time.
Hurts. Like, that was painful. Oh my goodness. Okay. Well, we'll have plenty to talk about next week. As usual, as we said, there's this weekend series coming up against the Rays. And besides the baseball stuff, we have possibly pranks to look forward to, which we will be sure to highlight any of those that happen over this weekend if they do happen. You can find Ryan on Twitter at @ByRyanLewis. Check out all of his stuff over at BeaconJournal.com. Like I said, under that Cleveland baseball sports tab. I'm Ashley Bastock. You can find me on Twitter at ashleybastock42. And we will see you next week if I am still speaking to Ryan then.